Welcome to the Dissertation Dive. This is a special podcast series where we dive into dissertations of scholars who completed their doctoral degrees in the past several years. As you know, the dissertation is the culminating experience of the doctoral journey, and it includes independent scholarship that is significant to our field. So I thought it'd be a great idea to dive into some outstanding dissertations. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Shannon Mulhern, the author of the dissertation titled Looking Inward, Does Physical Activity Promotion Training Transfer Beyond PEAK? Dr. Mulhern, thank you for joining me on the dissertation.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hemphill, for inviting me to be a part of the discussion. I've been really fortunate in my educational journey to have incredible mentors like Dr. Pamela Colonna, who was my dissertation chair. And I've had an amazing experience during my doctoral studies and beyond. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Great. I'm glad you agreed to participate. I think I remember talking to you about your research at ICEP in 2019 at Adelphi. And maybe you were kind of moving toward the dissertation at that time. But of course, COVID happened and we stopped going to conferences for a while. And so when this project came along, I thought of you and I thought, well, let's check in and see how that dissertation went. And so I'm glad you have been successful and we get to learn about what that process was like for you. So we will dive into your dissertation for a good part of today's interview. But first, would you tell us a little bit about what are you up to now in your career?
Sure. So currently, I'm an assistant professor at the University of Nebraska at Kearney. The health and physical education program is housed within the Department of Kinesiology and Sports Sciences. And then that department is within the College of Education. So I'm teaching, I like to focus on the elementary physical education methods. I also teach our assessment and evaluation course, motor development, and I'll be teaching for the first time, we just created a technology for health and physical education class.
Wow. So it sounds like you got plenty to keep you busy in your role there. What about a little bit about your background? How did you end up pursuing a doctoral degree in physical education?
All right. So with that, I'll give the disclaimer that it's a windy path. but I also really believe that like the turns and the twists that I have gone through to get here really helped me connect with my students at this point. And they also like help me conduct research in a way that is meaningful and important to me. So my connection to North Carolina, I went to high school there and I went to Appalachian State University. And my niece says that we say go Nears now. So go Nears. And I did my undergrad in physical education. And then I taught elementary school physical education in North Carolina and in Arizona. And really all along, my interest has been in like the healthy culture of schools and getting children to love physical activity early. And I feel like I really did innovative, curriculum structure so that I was teaching those things to elementary school kids. But I always worked in schools that were in like lower socioeconomic areas, and it became evident that even what I was teaching the elementary kids and I was giving them this love of nutrition and being physically active, but then if their home life doesn't support that, then it wasn't really able to go anywhere. And so then while I was in Arizona, I ended up going to Arizona State for my master's, because I decided, what if I could reach the adults and teach adults to be healthy parents? There's good research out there that if the parents are physically active and healthy, then they teach their kids to be. But then I quickly found out that, the adults are kind of stuck in their ways. And if they're not making healthy choices, they're not going to start to just because somebody with a master's suggests it to them. I ended up going to massage therapy school. So I had my master's and then I was like, well, how else can I affect people's health and wellness? And I went and I got my licensed massage therapy license. That's repetitive, but and I was a massage therapist and I worked at an acupuncture clinic. So I warned you, this was like a windy, weird path. But everything, you know, everything has related to how do you help people appreciate and pursue health. And so I ended up teaching at Arizona State in the exercise and wellness department. And again, I was also teaching at the massage therapy school. Like, I've always loved teaching throughout all of this. And when I was a full-time lecturer at Arizona State, I met one of the other lecturers was Dr. Kent Lorenz, and he had finished his PhD under Hans Vandermars. And so I was looking into, like, I was working with, you know, people with doctorates, and I was starting to kind of look into that. But I couldn't find a doctoral program in physical education at Arizona State. And so luckily, because I was working with Kent, he was like, no, it exists. It's just hidden within the College of Education. And so, like, you had to know where to look and who to look for. So he set up a lunch for me so that I could meet with Dr. Kalina and Dr. Vandermars. And it went from there. So it was really fantastic. So like I said, I started in K-12 and then went, you know, I got to teach elementary school and high school, and then went back for my master's, trying to, like, have a bigger reach. And then I went back to teaching at the college level, because again, if I could teach trainers and teach the teachers, then maybe I could have an even bigger reach. And then that, it just kind of naturally led to finding a doctoral program.
Yeah. So you said you have one you wrote, and I thought that doesn't sound too out of the ordinary, right? And then the massage therapy is definitely a unique feature of your experience. That's at least new to me. I don't know of any other physical educators with PhDs that have that background, but I imagine you feel like that experience is helpful to you and in what you do now in your career.
Sure. And with the massage therapy and at that acupuncture clinic, like, I got to interact with anatomy in a different way. And so, and again, you know, conversations that you and I have had, like, at that ICEP conference, yeah, is that, and I'll get into it also, is that it kind of worked alongside, I was already interested in mindfulness. And so that was kind of what naturally it was like. In my master's, I got burnt out of research. And yeah, so I was like, how else can I still affect, like I said, affect people's wellness, but without having to have everything be a number? And that's what led me to massage therapy. And so it kind of gave me, like, this nice interaction with mindfulness and like I said, with human anatomy in a different way that now helps me when I'm teaching motor development or when I'm teaching, you know, practical application of the things that we're teaching.
Right. Okay. And I appreciate the North Carolina connection as well. So you found the program at Arizona State and the faculty there that had some opportunities for doctoral studies. And I imagine you get through some classes and eventually you really have to find an interest for your dissertation. What were some of the influential things that led to the selection of your research topic?
So I was fortunate, as I said, I landed getting to work with Drs. Kalina and Vandermars, and they both had a lot of ongoing research. And so from day one, I really got to be involved in research out in schools. You know, we would have weekly meetings with the team and really get to talk about what's out there, what's needed. And so there was a lot of exposure to opportunities. And then even within Arizona State, like I said, the physical education is kind of hidden within the College of Education. So the program itself is called Learning Literacies and Technology. And So it's a inter or a transdisciplinary program. And so there's supports outside of just physical education. And so there was a social science research poster contest, and I think it was in my second year that I won the poster contest in the proposed research category. And it was research that was outside of what Pam and Hans did. But then, so they got to see some areas that I had interest in through these other experiences. And they were super supportive of, hey, so you, obviously your design was good. You won this poster. And so Dr. Coleno was like, go ahead and do the research. And so I got to test the waters before I got to the point where I had to propose the dissertation. And originally, like I said before, my interest was in the area of mindfulness and resilience. I'm really interested in stress and coping. And so I wanted to get into alternative school settings and look at how physical education instruction could benefit students in those alternative settings. That poster that I did was about breaking the school to prison pipeline, but using, again, messaging through physical education to influence that. And even though those aren't areas that my mentors focused on, they were willing to support me looking into that. And so I ended up connecting with Dr. Doug Ellison from Kent State, because he's done a lot of work with resilience. And they were like, look, these aren't areas that we are experts in, but we are experts in research, and we're happy to support you doing this and make sure that you're in contact with somebody who's in that area. But again, as we all know, the best dissertation is a done dissertation. And my interest in a high-risk population did not pan out into being a study that I was able to accomplish. I couldn't get through the gatekeepers. And so then it was through my comprehensive exams and the questions that I was posed for that I ended up falling into the topic that I did end up doing for my dissertation. So again, it was kind of a windy path, but it all works out to benefit the things that go on now. So I'm okay with it.
Right. So it's, you're a fan of windy paths, it sounds like, where we've gone so far in the interview. But let's see about the dissertation. Let's dive into that more specifically. What were the research questions that you tried to address, or, in general, what did you hope to learn about from your study?
All right. So the major motivation was to look at PEAK program impact. Arizona State was one of the featured programs in JOPR's special issue back in 2017 that looked at universities who have integrated aspects of CISPAP into their programming. And so since the faculty took a lot of time to create these opportunities, then, I felt like it's a worthy dive, if you will, to look at then what is the effect. So their intention was to benefit their pre-service teachers. And so now looking at maybe what is the offshoot effect of those efforts. So I had two main questions. The first was, what is the level of implementation of physical activity programming beyond physical education class by physical education teachers who graduated from ASU? And then the second was, what are the perceptions of expanded physical activity programming by that same group? And again, I'm kind of using those two terminologies because I talk about a CISPAP or a comprehensive school physical activity program, but even when I was teaching elementary school, I had expanded physical activity offerings, but it wasn't called a SysPath at that point. And so I found it was more efficacious to just say expanded physical activity programming, even though ultimately I was basing it on that, the model of a SysPath. And so what my purpose was to see if I could see in graduates that they were applying concepts or practices that they were taught during their PEAT training. And I will also say SysPath in general still is a little bit controversial, I have found. There are plenty of people out there who don't like the idea of expecting that a physical education teacher should be doing things outside of teaching high quality lessons and focusing on those psychomotor outcomes. And so it kind of still fits in. So like I said, I wanted to do work with high risk students at alternative schools because they are the extreme. And so if you go into a group who is extreme and who is doing something a little bit differently, you should be able to track outcomes a little bit easier. They're going to be less subtle. And so since there are a few PEAT programs at this point who have implemented changes related to SysPath, then that's also something that should be able to be tracked more easily, I'll say, because it's something different, right? Like they were doing standard programming like most of us do, and now they did something different. And so we should be able to say, all right, here's the moment in time where that happened. Can we see a difference?
Yeah. So SysPath, you know, the literature is really developing in that space. And I wonder, when you entered your dissertation, you proposed these questions, which you know, are somewhat novel, I suppose, but did the literature lead you to believe or, you know, to kind of understand where this study might go? Like, did you have a sense for how much CSPAP is being implemented beyond PE as you entered the dissertation study?
I won't say so much how much it's being implemented. There is literature looking at, program assessment was really, I guess to work backwards a little bit here, is how I ended up looking at SysPath implementation. So there's, when you look at research that has been done by doctoral students over the years, there's a lot of research where we're looking at what's happening in classrooms or in the gym. There's research about what's happening in the world, how that relates to physical education, but there's limited research looking at specific effects of what PEAT programs are doing. And so my focus was really on that aspect. There's a great quote from Graeber from a 1988 paper that says, teacher educators seem to know more about what happens to students in public schools than they do about what happens to students in their own classrooms. And so with like I said, my process of doing the comprehensive exam and looking at the history of a few doctoral programs, then that kind of led me over to this area. And so the literature that I was looking at was really, how are we assessing PEAT programs? And again, that is personal to me because my intention was to end up teaching right where I am in a physical education teacher education program. And so how do we figure out that what we're teaching is actually having an effect on our students? And so there's, the literature had a lot of conversation about what does it even mean to be effective? And so topics I'm sure we've all talked about, like, so do we measure their pedagogical knowledge? Do we measure their content knowledge? Is it their pedagogical content knowledge? Like, or is it the application of those things? So how do we measure it? And there's not a perfect answer on that. In a previous discussion, I mentioned some of the work from Metzler, and I will say it wrong, so I apologize if you end up listening to this podcast. But I don't know if is it Zierma? Sorry, that'll be terrible. But I don't know how to say their last name. But I've read a lot of their papers because they did a lot of work looking at this process that they went through at Georgia State University to evaluate their own program. And mm-hmm. So there's a piece that they have that's called Ending Back at the Beginning, Some Reflections of PEAT Assessment. And that one really stood out to me. And again, another quote in that literature dive that I loved was that they said, we also learned that it doesn't always matter why decisions are made. It matters more to mark the point in time when one is made and to find ways to assess the program from there. And so, like I said, there's a point in time where Arizona State made this conscious decision. And so it's marked, and now we can look and see what was the downstream effect of that. So I'm sorry, it's a long answer, but
thank you. I mean, it's well grounded in literature. I appreciate that explanation, and I believe it. I at one point knew how to pronounce it because it's now it's Dr. Bonnie Blankenship, but of course previously under the name you mentioned, which is a bit harder to pronounce if we're not familiar with it. So methods, you looked at the literature, you had some good guidance on that. But what methods did you propose to address your research question?
Thanks for asking. I went with a mixed method approach. And so my mentors recommended that we went with the two study or the two article dissertation design, even though I will tell you that a lot of work had to go into parsing both of those things down to even submit them for publication. But so to keep them kind of separate, it was like two phases of the same study. And so the phase one was the quantitative piece with a questionnaire. And then that obviously, like, that helped. That was the access point for my participants. Yeah. And like, those are nice. Obviously, a questionnaire, you can get out to a lot of people in a shorter amount of time. But then there's always the question of, like, do they answer it honestly? And so the second portion worked to be both a fidelity check and the qualitative piece, where people who completed the questionnaire were invited to allow me to come for a follow-up observation and interview, campus visit. And so those were my two pieces that allowed me to kind of quickly quantify a lot of things, what graduates said that they were doing implementation wise. And like we've talked about, there's so much in a dissertation that you can't fit into a single either discussion or publication. But there was a whole thing about like how much they remembered about learning about CISPAP or expanded physical activity within their schooling. I found a great questionnaire that was already out there for perceptions of innovations. So I didn't talk about earlier that I found the diffusion of innovations theory by Rogers. And, you know, really, I was using that to kind of base things off, so that how do these ideas diffuse into the teaching population, and how much does it spread from PEAT training? And so they're having that mixed methods kind of allowed me to quantify some things, but then also have a smaller subsample that then I could follow up with and do that qualitative piece with.
Right. So I like that two article method that you had and gives you the opportunity to maybe disseminate a little bit quicker on the back end of the dissertation study, I'm sure. But before we get to, you know, that far down the line, I guess we'll talk about how you structured your analysis process. Because once you had all that data in hand, of course, you had to wrestle with it and try to make some meaning of it. What was that process like for you?
So in my program, again, at Arizona State, we didn't have to do, so in the learning literacy and technology, we only had to do a basic statistics course. But I chose to also take additional statistics courses, so I felt more comfortable by the time I did my dissertation working with my quantitative data. And so we were trained in R, and I've used Stata, but really the SPSS functionality is my friend. And so I had all that quantitative data that, you know, I guess as far as structuring it, you know, of course I had my Excel sheet and my data tables, but it was really helpful to look at those things visually. And so having those scatter plots, having those bar graphs, so that I could really just think of the numbers in different ways, right? Because the numbers themselves don't mean a whole lot, but then getting to conceptualize them and look at the relationships a little bit differently. And then with the qualitative portion, I did go through like a third party transcription company, but I went with like the cheaper, like 1 cent per minute option, because I was on the graduate student income. And so because it was a cheaper tool, that I did still have to listen to every single recording multiple times and correct the transcripts. So it saved me time that I didn't have to transcribe myself, but it also gave me that opportunity to listen to my data multiple times. So I knew both sections. I knew my quantitative data inside and out because I looked at it different ways. I looked at it in my tables. I looked at it in my graphs. I looked at it with my scatter plots to just get to know it before I really started trying to write about it.
Yeah. So moving toward your findings, I know you've had a lot, you know, to share, a lot of important outcomes from your dissertation. What do you think were some of the most important findings that you could share with listeners?
Well, like we said, there's there are a lot. And so just trying to focus on, I guess, what I found were the interesting pieces. Looking at, again, from the questionnaire, and so I did look at what were the perceptions of CISPAP as an innovation. And, you know, the assumption would be that if you were taught about it during your college training, then you should feel more, you know, positive about it. And so we saw some of that, but some things that were really interesting were, like, if you look specifically, so the change was in 2007. And if you look at like 2008 to 2010, there's a couple individuals who show up as having negative perceptions. And so that was interesting to me because, again, it's not a major finding that's going to make it in probably any of my publications. But because you can really dive deeply and look at all these minuscule outcomes within your dissertation, like, that's interesting when we think about when we adopt an innovation, right? So as the professor, when I try something new, it's probably not going to be fantastic the first time. And so I have to have some time for that trial and error. And it's really possible that now if I look at my student evaluations at the end of that semester, there's going to be some students who aren't happy with it because they talked to students last year and they were expecting me to do this, you know, or now I added a new assignment and their friends didn't tell them about that. And so it was kind of interesting to see that it wasn't something I was looking for or expecting. And so it was interesting to see that there were some students who graduated within the first few years of them adopting that change who had a negative perception. The other thing was I asked in the questionnaire, you know, what are they currently teaching? Are they currently teaching? And not everyone was currently in a gym as a physical education teacher. And so separating individuals out and looking, the lowest perceptions were people who were currently teaching physical education in secondary schools. And that's interesting because, again, with my previous work that I did with Dr. Kalina, it was also classroom teachers at secondary sites who have given us the most pushback and aren't as open to classroom movement. And so it was interesting to see that it's the same for physical education teachers at secondary schools. So it went lowest with secondary physical education teachers. The next highest was elementary school physical education teachers. And in everything I've seen, that's pretty common, where the elementary school physical education teachers are more like, they are the ones who have adopted the innovation. They see the benefits that elementary students have from being moving around or from being physically active. But then higher than that were teachers who were currently teaching at a setting that went all the way K-12 or K-8. And so, like, it was interesting that secondary physical educators didn't think it was that great. They were the lowest raters. Then we have the elementary school. But the fact that if you're at a full K-12, you saw it as more positive than even just the straight elementary physical education teachers. And then outside of people who were currently teaching, then it was actually administrators. And actually, I'm sorry, that includes people who are teaching as well. So if you took in all the categories, then the highest rating was for current administrators. And so that was awesome to me. Of course, it's people who are currently administrators, but who have their background in physical education, right? Because they were only part of this study because they graduated from Arizona State's physical education program. And so administrators with physical education backgrounds are the ones who have the most positive perception of a CISPAP. And the literature tells us that, you know, how important it is that the administrators are supportive. And so it was kind of interesting that was where I saw the highest perceptions. So quantitatively, there was that, you know, qualitatively outcomes, you know, were that I did get to observe things happening in classrooms. I got that opportunity to see what the different application of expanded physical activity looked like. And so having that experience of actually going out and seeing what it looked like and getting to listen to students talk about their memories of what they learned when they were in the PEAT program was really meaningful. But again, those are two separate full publications on their own. So I won't go too crazy on telling you every quote.
Sure. I'm sure they're interesting to hear. Earlier, you talked about, you kind of gave a preface and you said, you know, CSPAP can't be controversial, you know, it might be burdensome in some instances, or there's concerns around that. And then I was thinking about, you know, if you think about the school day, a lot of teachers are engaged in a lot of different things beyond just teaching PE, whether it's, you know, bus duty or all duty or, you know, coaching or just all types of things. As we all know, is there a sense from, you know, your work that CSPAC can provide an opportunity for PE teachers to be more focused on their area of expertise? Or, you know, is there any way you can speak to that from your perspective?
Well, I would say that goes back again to the administrator support. So the both in the quantitative outcome and the qualitative. So many teachers are, I guess it's hard whenever I talk about this study because it's like they are graduates, but they're also teachers. So I call them both. But the current teachers, without the support of their administrator, then exactly what you're saying. Like, how can I have an after school program when I'm on bus duty? You know, how can I have a for school program? And it even came down to, like, if the school was using a paid, a program, and I can't think of exactly what they're called right at this moment, but like if there's an outside entity that comes in and takes care of their before school or their after school care, but then the physical education teacher also wants to be involved in that, wants to integrate movement and make sure that, you know, equipment is available and being used respectfully, they need the time for that. They need the space for that. And so just like how we lose our space for picture day and, you know, all these other things, even when they're planning these extra opportunities, they're losing their spaces. And, you know, so if there's not administrator support, then it's not possible. And so it really is, I think the advocacy piece comes into play a lot is, you know, even if we're not teaching CISPAP, we need to make sure that we're teaching our PEAT students how to get out of the gym and make sure that they're being seen. Because the second that the physical education teacher doesn't have to do bus duty, but everybody else has had to do their rotation, there's going to be animosity. But the only way for there not to be animosity is when they realize that you don't have that duty because you're overseeing 60 kids in the gymnasium who are doing intramurals with you. And, you know, that is a service you're providing. But if nobody knows what's happening in your gym, then they can't appreciate it, respect it, you know, and so they're only going to be then complaining to the administration, and then the administration is only hearing negative. And so I think a big piece of that from getting the opportunity to go out into those schools and talk to teachers is that the ones who felt the most autonomy and were able to create their CISPAP or their expanded physical activity program also were really comfortable being outside of the gym and interacting with the rest of the school, talking to their administration. And so those soft skills kind of pepper in as well as being really important.
So I'm sure it's fun to reflect back on your dissertation. If you had to go back and do it all over again, would you do anything differently?
Like I said, I appreciate the windy path. I don't really think so. I feel like my mentors, my location, all were important. And, you know, we all were on the same page. And like I said, I don't know that we ever, like, wrote out a plan of here's how to finish in 4 years. But, you know, like, even when I proposed the dissertation, one of the things that Dr. Vandermars insisted was that there had to be a timeline in there. And so everything had to be mapped out. And so within the full program, things were mapped out. As far as, like, we knew that I needed to do my comprehensive exams, you know, in that third year. So I was, set up to propose and get my IRB completed so I could collect my data in the fall of my fourth year. You know, everything was really organized and planned out. And so I felt like I had the time to do everything that I needed. I didn't, like, obviously I was stressed. There was a ton of work. So nobody, like, don't go to a doctoral program thinking, like, as long as you have a good plan, it's going to be perfect and sunshine and rainbows every day. Because it was not. But the struggle is part of that process. And, you know, it made a difference that I had mentors who were on campus, who were accessible to me, who spoke to me every single day, who, you know, role modeled all the important things. And so that set me up for success. And so obviously I was successful, so I would not change the path.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear that. And I wonder, what can you share about how your dissertation is playing out in your career now? Are you, you know, disseminating that work, or are you making use of it in other ways?
So I did get my chapter three, which is the quantitative portion of the study, is already published. My qualitative chapter four is in second revision right now. So hopefully it will be accepted here shortly and that will get published. I will likely always stay connected to research around CISPAP or around expanded physical activity, because, like I said, it's something I do believe in, and I believe in, I mean, I've seen so much with like that health ecological model and how important it is to just have a full system that is supporting healthy decisions. So that's always going to be part of what I do. But then now that I am in my own position, and I've had an opportunity to, you know, collaborate with more people and work on sneaking into areas that I have those interests in. I did just submit a grant, and I'm looking at getting into the alternative schools in Nebraska, and finally getting into that research that I wanted to do for my dissertation. And so again, that whole process is still a part of what I'm doing right now. And again, things that I learned by talking to people and asking about their memories of their PEAT program affect how I teach. And so on that personal level, then I do make sure I intentionally, like, I point out things that I'm teaching and why I'm teaching them. There was at least, there's one memorable interview where the student, I asked, like, do you ever reach out to parents? Like, you had to do this assignment, so now do you do that? And he was like, I've never even considered it. Like, I didn't even think about it. And like, that struck me that so at Arizona State, the faculty, like, suggested these things, but didn't, like, point out, hey, I'm teaching you this so that you'll do this. And so that's something that I take with me, is that I make sure if there's something that I think I'm, like, trying to get that hidden message to them, I'll just blatantly, like, tell my students, hey, this is why I'm teaching this to you, is I have found that this is really helpful in the classroom. And so I'm modeling this for you, so you will then apply it when you're out in the field. So on a teaching level, that dissertation process is affecting me. On a research level, it's affecting me. Because again, I got to see the qualitative and the quantitative part. I've gotten to see it all the way through to publication. And yeah, I mean, it's working out.
Yeah, really glad to hear that. And I think it's a great example for us to share on this podcast series. And among the listeners are likely going to be future doctoral students, or, you know, current doctoral students who are thinking about a dissertation, and people who might be kind of struggling with their dissertation process. What advice could you give to someone who might be struggling with their dissertation right now?
I would say, like, number one is don't isolate yourself. I think it's really easy in that process because it is, it's a struggle. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of late nights, early mornings, traveling, scheduling. Like, it is a difficult process. But if you hold it in and you keep it to yourself, that's not going to benefit anybody. And so talk to your mentor, talk to other graduate students. That was so huge. Like you spoke about, I got to chat with you at ICEP, and you know, those relationships that I had with early career faculty, with current graduate students, it really helped me. It helped keep things in perspective because I got to hear from people who were ahead of me in the process. I got to chat with people who were at the same place, and it really helped me understand the process. It helped me see what I was doing well. It helped me talk through ideas of how to do things a little bit differently. And now those are the same people that I catch up with. Like I said, even within my transdisciplinary, whatever they want to call it, program at Arizona State, since they're not all health and physical education, then at AERA, I seek those same people out, and we catch up and we talk about what we're doing now in our third year, fourth year, as faculty. And so I say the main thing is don't keep it to yourself. Don't hold it in. Make sure you're talking to someone and someone who can relate, because definitely it's nice to have, you know, your friends that you don't have to talk about research with, but it's really helpful to talk to other graduate students who are going through it and understand the struggle.
Absolutely. Thank you for that advice. And we're about at the end of the interview here. It's been a wonderful conversation. Is there anything else you would like listeners to know about you or your dissertation?
Oh man, you caught me off guard with that one. I don't know, but you know, I like I said, just trying to be well-rounded, trying to talk to people, and even in the process of deciding if I was going to go to my, you know, go get my doctorate, I talked to a ton of people. I asked a bunch of questions within my social groups. I, you know, looked for people. And so if you do have those questions, like, please approach me at a conference. Like, I want to talk about these things. I want to make sure that I'm a person who is supportive and helpful. So when you're in the struggle, we can chat about the struggle together. But I mean, otherwise, I think I'm pretty straightforward. I'm just trying to live the academia dream, and I do believe that you can do whatever you want to do. And so if you have that person in your ear saying that you can only do this or you can only do that, and that, you know, dissertation isn't for you, or you're gonna run into walls and it's too hard, too this, too that, talk to us, because it's not. You can make it what you want to make it. You can do what you want to do. I don't know. Is that the positive Shannon message?
I like it, that living the dream. I like that conception of being a faculty member in higher ed. So thank you for sharing your dissertation with us. Again, really enjoy the conversation and look forward to seeing you on the conference circuit or, you know, maybe somewhere around North Carolina one day.
For sure.
Thanks for joining us on the Dissertation Dive.
Thank you so much.